The following is the College Council meeting for November the 21st. Due to technical difficulties, the beginning of the meeting was not recorded. We join the meeting in progress.
Whenever you're ready.
All right. Well, good morning, everybody. My name is Gene Gaffney, and these are my fellow students, Cindy Humphrey and Kirk Sweet. And the three of us are minors in the Wilderness Education Department. And Wilderness Education is a minor study here, and what we do is we learn wilderness technical skills, and we also learn leadership. So we appreciate your attention while we recap our experiential education here.
Okay, so I'm just going to give you guys a brief overview of how the program kind of functions. Wilderness Education offers two different tracks. There's the Adventure Education track or the Wilderness Leadership track. Kind of call it fork in the road. You can pick one or the other. I know personally, and Gene also, we went down both routes. Gene's completed it, and I'm midway through the process, but tell you a little bit about each. So Adventure Education, this is more suited necessarily for people who are interested in rock climbing, high ropes courses, a little bit more front country than back country, that is the wilderness leadership. But several opportunities involved with this as well. You're required to take the backpacking course, so you get a little bit of a taste regardless of the backcountry adventure. But this is primarily if you're interested in things such as therapeutic recreation or leading groups that are of different populations, and it's an adventure aspect. You're not necessarily trying to teach anybody like hard skills and really get the nitty gritty, but it's a good way to get involved in wilderness ed without trying to dive really deep. Wilderness leadership. I went on Lead One this summer. It's a 14-day backpacking trip that you kind of get the harder skills of leading groups. This is part of the Wilderness Leadership Program that is the backpacking course, Wilderness Leadership One, and then again, Wilderness Leadership Two, that these two have both participated in. Lead One is an experience. 14 days is not something I've ever done. Out in the wilderness, it was different for me. But the Wilderness Leadership track has taught me a lot of things that the Adventure track has not. While they both have a strong leadership aspect, it is leadership under stress. You're outside your comfort zone, more so in this track, I believe, than in the Adventure track, because there's a lot more homey comfort in the Adventure track. You have the safety of the rock climbing wall, and you can stay up in the front country, but the back country, you don't shower for 14 days, you eat the same food over and over again, you get uncomfortable, and it teaches you how to be a good leader in that sort of scenario. So that's kind of what leadership taught me. And it is the Wilderness 50 Act, it was the 50th year of the Wilderness Act, so we kind of commemorated that by doing a little piece to our trip where we got to visit St. Hezzy's Cabin before we went out, and these guys will give you a little bit more information on that trip. So that's a picture from the cabin. So our theme for this presentation is going to be what we've gotten out of the program and what we put in. I put a fair amount of time into this program. There is a joke that we sold our souls wilderness education. And it's true. I spent every weekend taking classes, TAing for classes. I am very involved in this program. And it's not because I feel obligated to, it's because I love it. And it's what keeps me here at SUNY Potsdam. I recently applied for Presidential Scholars. I was lucky enough to be accepted as Presidential Scholar, and I contribute the majority of that to my education through my wilderness education. And I'll give you a brief little synopsis of my program proposal. I am a Navy brat. I grew up in a Navy family. We moved around a lot, and I saw a lot of things in the military that I didn't understand until I got here. And with Fort Drum being so close and having the wilderness here, I came up with this program that is enabling me to work with veterans, combat veterans in particular, and try and reintegrate them in society by using wilderness education. So essentially, what I'll be doing is evaluating reintegration programs and seeing what's being done, particularly in Fort Drum, and how it can be bettered using things that aren't necessarily pharmacotherapy or other drug-related aspects, but rather using the natural environment and the wilderness and the community care it's being passed in to help ameliorate some of those reintegration problems that could be comorbid with drug and alcohol abuse. So that's kind of where I'm at. I'm trying to get back to the program and helping my fellow leaders get positions where they can lead troops and give back to both communities because I've gotten so much great people. Here's another picture of my community one. Pass it off to her.
Okay, so I was part of the Leadership 2 course this summer. This is a 21-day expedition out west, backpacking. And what's different about this is that the students you see here plan the entire course from the ground up. So that's how we're getting our food, how it's being delivered halfway through there, how we're driving or taking a train and flying there. And we did that through splitting it up into different committees. We also needed a fundraise for this course. And the course is really focused on advanced leadership, decision-making, risk management policies, and implementing those into the field. And the big takeaway from that course is self-management, because everybody needs to be self-empowered to do that sort of course and work together with one another. So some of the program goals with the Wilderness Ed is creating self-empowered leaders in public and private agencies. And those skills that we learn are transferable not only to the wilderness, but in the classroom and also in different working environments. Another one is understanding the issues that come with wilderness leadership and wilderness preservation, so outdoor education. That's something that we want the students to learn. Another one is understanding the ecosystems, the flora, fauna, and geology of the places that we're going into. A huge one is avoiding dangerous situations, because obviously if we're out there for 21 days, we can't just call an ambulance if something happens. We have to be self-empowered and use sound risk management policies when we're out there, which is a huge factor in the decision-making process. Another one is to provide emergency care when we're out there, and we do that by learning wilderness medicine in the classroom, so that when we're out there, if something happens, we can take care of it. And another one is to demonstrate competency in a specialized skill, so that can be planning an expedition, leading an expedition, or rock climbing, or ice climbing, or something similar to that.
Also, demonstrating the ability to plan and facilitate adventure programs. We do that through our work here. Several of us work at the Rock Wall. We plan to facilitate programs through leadership and adventure education courses, as well as therapy and recreation classes.
So college service, this is us giving back to the college and to the community, and we do that in three main ways. The first one is that some of the leaders in the wilderness education program formed a relationship with the Adirondack Mountain Club and their educational affiliate program, so that we became leaders for them, so that we can lead trips for the public for them. Another way we did that was with the Wilderness 50 Act, which I'll briefly go over, but you guys will cover that after this presentation. And that is just trips for anybody throughout the college that wants to go on a trip. And so the Wilderness 50 trips, we worked with Venture Outdoors, which is the Outdoor Recreation Rental Center here on campus. It's located in the Student Union. And there's a variety of different trips ranging from 1 day to 3 day backpacking trips. There's rock climbing. There's a paddling trip, you can see right there. And our leader, you can see this, he's on the side with the hat there. So we have our leaders from the program lead these trips for a bunch of diverse students that want to go on these sort of wilderness experiences out there. The third way that we give back is by doing trail work through different spots in the Adirondacks. This one is on Azure Mountain. We're reconstructing the trail. And that's in Santa Clara, right next door in Hanama Falls. We do reconstruction on the Red Sandstone Trail. And also in South Colton, we work at Stone Valley, which is also reconstructing the trail there. Azure Mountain here, another thing that we did for Leadership 2 when we were fundraising, we did a mountainathon, which was taking 60 pounds of rocks up the mountain 4 times and dumping them up there so that the trail wouldn't get eroded anymore. So that's just different ways that our program is trying to give back to the community. So my experience, I'm a teacher's assistant for the different courses here. This is our spring, quote-unquote spring, it's 5 days, and you can see the different students around me that we take out for 5 days and just teach the introductory backpacking skills going out there. I'm also the equipment room manager, so you can see there's a tarp above us so that if it snows, we can all still be cozy and cook under there. You can see water bags and tents, and I service all of those equipment so that we can run and facilitate these sorts of courses. Through the skills and time that I put into this program, I was accepted as an intern in Alaska working for a professional guiding service. And there's several students that have gone through this program that have gotten jobs after this, and this is just one example of the skills that I've learned from this program and taking it somewhere, leading backpacking trips, glacier hikes, ice climbing, and things like that in Alaska. So that's my experience.
Great. So right here's a picture of me receiving my Wilderness Ed Minor in both the Adventure Track, like Cindy mentioned earlier, and the Wilderness Leadership. So what's important here is I'm originally from the Bronx, New York, and I came up here and I took a backpacking course, and I really loved the sense of community, but also the drive for, you know, individuality there. So I enrolled in every class I could take in Wilderness Ed, and I took Lead 1, Lead 2. I definitely went outside my comfort zone. And through that, I learned to keep stretching the limits, keep kind of going after more. So after speaking with my professors, I learned that there's more jobs in the wilderness industry than there are people to fill them. And in the same way, our professors, as hard as you want to work and as much as you want to do, as much as you can handle, they'll give you. And so I was involved in the first year of the freshman, first year success seminar. I was I created an outdoor orientation program for incoming freshmen to help with retention. And also I did my senior project for a theater major. And I took theater into the wilderness, and I was the first person to do that. So, next slide, please. Yes, so the Freshman Success Seminar is basically an introduction for college freshmen and first-year students to the university's resources, and I acted as a mentor, as I was the teacher assistant. And we took them on various wilderness trips. And like I said, I was in the pilot run of this program. We're called Into the Wild, after the John Krakauer book. And we were first and second year. This is our second year. Now we have a record-breaking 28 students out of all the Potsdam first-year experience. So this wilderness program is really expanding as time goes on. I mean, we have the Wilderness 50. We have tremendous amount of students signing up for our courses and our first year success seminar. And so a freshman outdoor orientation, something that a lot of colleges have been doing now. In 2011, there were counted about 200 colleges doing outdoor orientation programs, and every year about 10 more colleges jump on this. So what it does is it's basically an orientation program before the traditional campus orientation for freshmen, but also transfers. So we would go out into the wilderness and spend some time on overnights. And what that does, and I've printed some research if you guys are interested, but the findings, according to Brent Bell, PhD at New Hampshire University, they've been showing positive effects of outdoor orientation programs on retention in colleges, grades, and something that they found was college freshmen and first-year students, their biggest anxiety was fitting in, feeling connectedness. So that's what these orientations really kind of hone in on. They get that sense of community that I felt my backpacking trip, and we get the freshmen right away, and they did studies, and the studies were they would go to the people who graduated school 10 years later, 15 years later, and speak with them, you know, and they would say, hey, you know, I wouldn't be where I was today in a job that I love, being successful, if it weren't for that initial thing. So, you know, I was, our professors, they gave me the ball and they let me run with this, and I, with the help from the deans, I was able to put this program together for us, and we're looking to run it in August of next year. I will since graduate. Unfortunately, we didn't have the funds this year to run it, but we were only short about $400, so we're waiting for next year. Next slide, please. And so I mentioned I'm a theater major, and so my theater senior project was up in the air. My theater advisor said I could do whatever I wished, and so I decided to take students into a six-day backpacking trip, but we incorporated theater as a sense of therapy. I also studied therapeutic recreation, and basically went out into the woods and we talked about stuff and we devised theater. And so what will be presented in our next presentation, I'm sure, is that stories about protecting and spending time in the natural world, whether it's theater, film, any kind of storytelling, it has great potential to affect behavioral changes in the lives of ordinary people. Spending active time in the outdoors must become an unconscious behavior by the critical mass of humans for the environmental movement to succeed. And so I mentioned I'm the first person to do this program, but not only in SUNY Potsdam, in general. At first I started researching, looking for books to help me with this, and as I reached out to different universities and different scholars, I realized that I would be the first person to do this ever and document it. So I've been asked by Taproot, an academic journal of outdoor education, to report any findings I had. So yeah, it's real great stuff. There's another picture of us just doing some weird theater things. So yeah, next slide, please. So you know, we see this Arthur Ashe quote. And so as Cindy mentioned, you know, as much as you can put in this program, we'll throw it right back to you. There's a tremendous amount of growth. I don't know the amount, but more students every year are coming in. We have to create new classes every year. So
something to mention also is that our program, this wilderness education, it's a minor. We have more students in our minor than some of the students do here on campus. So I think that says a lot about how we've done with retention as well as bringing students in. We have a lot going for us, and we know it, and we know how to project it out to the community here. So just kind of in today's schooling.
Here's a thank you. Jim German's hike from the Wilderness 50, and I think there's one more. And so I'd really like to thank you guys, and if you'd like to talk to us individually about the different work that we do, we'd really appreciate that after this. And
thank you.
Thank you.
Does anyone have any questions?
Yeah.
Where are you all from? What year are you? I know you're from the Bronx.
This is my last semester.
Okay.
I'm a junior here at CG Potsdam. Like I said, I'm a Navy brat, so I kind of moved around all over. But most recently, I lived in southwestern New York in the Alfred area. So I had the opportunity to go to Alfred State, and they wanted me to go, but I didn't.
Yeah.
So I studied anthropology here, as well as wilderness education, therapeutic recreation, and community health minors.
I'm an environmental studies and art studio major. I'm a junior here, and I'm from Buffalo, New York.
I bet you're glad you're here right now.
Oh, yeah.
Well, the city didn't get so bad. It's the South Towns.
Yeah.
Alfred, yeah. Okay, thank you all very much. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
Slides which set up.
Sure.
Kristen has all the pretty pictures anyway. and I guess I have to begin by cautioning you that environmental studies isn't nearly so much fun as wilderness education. But we were delighted this year.
Do you think it is?
Yeah. We were delighted this year to be able to participate in the national celebration of the 50th anniversary of the Wilderness Act passed by Congress in 1964. It was the culmination of really a generation of efforts to preserve wild lands from resource development and from recreational development, road, particularly road development. And initially, the law set aside 10 million acres of federal land as protected. That since increased to about 110 million nationally. New York State has only one federal wilderness area. It's on Long Island, National Seashore. But New York State is very much the home of the wilderness movement, given the Adirondack Park and the Forever Wild protection given to the Forest Preserve there. And indeed, the very, this was coincidentally the 120th anniversary of the Forever Wild clause in the Constitution. And so we were really delighted to be able to participate in state and national celebrations. In the state, the Adirondack Wild organization took the lead in organizing events, along with Bob Bullock from City Potsdam alum, from the Rockefeller Institute of Government in City Albany. And so they provided lots of meetings, some coffee, and no money, but lots of energy for us to get some programs together. And I'll talk about one of the programs, and Kristen will talk about everything else. A colleague from Clarkson University, Bill Vitek, and I, put together a small grant from Associated Colleges to bring together some faculty and students with some nationally famous people who think about wilderness. And we kicked that off with Phil Terry, who is the historian of the Adirondacks. We all assigned his work in our environmental studies courses. And Phil was actually a visiting scholar here a few years ago. Phil came in and gave a public lecture on the links between New York State wilderness and national wilderness. We had about 200 people in attendance. I was pretty impressed. And then he also conducted a seminar for faculty from the four colleges on critical ideas about wilderness as they've developed really since the 1980s, 1990s. So how we've come to think about wilderness in new and different ways. And we had about a dozen faculty in that. Our second program was at Clarkson University, and my colleague Bill Vitek brought in a friend of his, Craig Holdridge, who's the chairman of an organization, a nonprofit called the Nature Institute down in Ghent, New York. Holdridge is interested in talking about wildness other than wilderness, and wildness as it exists not just in wilderness places, but as it exists in cultivated places and plants and animals, even as it exists in the ecology of our bodies. And so he had a well-attended talk at Clarkson, where he presented ideas in his latest book, Thinking Like a Plant. And then he also conducted a faculty seminar for about a dozen of us at Clarkson, where we talked about how the idea of wildness might be a way of a return to wildness and to wild systems as a way of advancing us socially and technologically. So all in all, we were delighted to share in this state and national participation in these ways and a lot of other ways that Kristen's going to
talk. Great, thanks. So in addition to the public lectures, we also wanted to, because part of the charge, if you will, was to not only celebrate the Wilderness Act, but also to cultivate a new generation of wilderness leadership, which obviously Wilderness Act has done quite a good job of that here. And so we wanted to try to integrate as many different wilderness activities and discussions about wilderness, not only into public lectures, but also into our curriculum. And so in addition, we brought, this was a public lecture by Professor Chad Dawson, who's a SUNY ESF professor emeritus. He is currently the editor of the International Journal of Wilderness Management, and he's written several textbooks on wilderness management. And he did a public presentation, which was well attended by several environmental studies and wilderness ed students, discussing not only the milestones to date in terms of the Wilderness Act, but also challenges ahead. And in addition to wilderness leadership, he also mentioned, you know, concerns about climate change and how climate change is going to affect the wilderness system. And a lot of our students here on SUNY CF's campus are really working on climate change issues and bringing some of that wilderness and climate change concerns together. And so in addition to these public talks, we integrated, we brought Adirondack folk musician Dan Bergren. Some of you might be familiar with some of his work here, and so we collaborated with the Crane School of Music to bring him and had a nice performance, and he also did a small workshop with Crane students, both vocalist students and also musicians, about making folk music and making environmental music. We had a couple community members attend that event as well, so some cross-campus connections here. That's Dr. Julie Hunter from Crane. She was fabulous in rallying the Crane students, and Gary McLaughlin from the PAC, who opened up the PAC for us for this event. So throwing a little music in here as well. And then throughout our curriculum, right, we have the leadership wilderness ed programs that our students mentioned. We also integrated the, so you saw this picture at the Zanheiser Cabin on the Lead One trip. Integrated wilderness into our FIGS, freshman interest groups. And so this is a small group of faculty who students take classes in comp, ecology, intro to environmental studies, and photography. And every Friday we go into the Adirondacks for field trips. And so it's a natural fit with the wilderness, but this year we really emphasized wilderness preservation. And so this was our first trip out to the St. Regis wilderness area. And we were also partnering with Dan Plumley of Adirondack Wild, so bringing some community partners in to the early field trips. And we have a pretty diverse group of students this year, a lot of people from downstate, and I think we've planted that wilderness hook. So, I mean, you look at that erratic, you can't not be amazed. And then, as several people have mentioned, we did several campus-wide trips that we offered out to the community, to the campus community to participate in. I think we've led, or students and faculty led, at least 15 different trips with a probably capacity of over 150 students that were able to participate. And we did a lot of them on one weekend in September, and it was one of the most beautiful weekends I think we've had in a very long time. So weather was on our side, and so here's just some photographs from these different trips. One of our freshmen on a trip to Cat Mountain, which is led by my colleague Bill Brown in Environmental Studies, Cranberry Lake. You can't not love the colors, right? Should put that on all of our promotional material. It says the trail was only 2.2 miles, but we hiked like 10 by then. It was much longer than that. So, and Gene here led the Cat Mountain trip, and then he did St. Regis the next day, so he had a busy weekend that weekend. They had mentioned the rock climbing at Azure Mountain. We also included our FIGS as part of the backcountry trail work in South Colton as part of the community service component.
Rocky Ridge?
I've definitely say two things about that trip. It was an 11-mile hike between two high peaks. The Wilderness Ed leadership team was absolutely awesome. And what was also awesome, we had at least two people on that group from the city who had never been outdoors in their lives. And they did 11 miles, 2 weeks, and they both made it. I had to carry one guy's pack down, but he made it. So it was really an awesome opportunity to get out in places where they ordinarily would not go.
Success. And everybody came back?
Everybody came back.
There was also trips into an overnight camping trip into the St. Regis Canoe area that was led by Wilderness Ed Professor Adam Wheeler. And there's the whole gang. Another trip led by Gene up St. Regis Mountain. And we had several different women's leadership trips throughout the month of September. This is just one up DeBar Mountain. And Maureen Herbert from the library was really instrumental in getting that going and coordinating that.
That was also partnered with Adirondack Mountain Club.
Yes. Maureen does a lot of work with the Adirondack Mountain Club and sort of bringing those two organizations together. And then at the summit, we made it. And then, you know, a program of this magnitude is not possible without, you know, a lot of different people coming together, and so we had a lot of help, not only from the provost office and the dean, but the associated colleges and Pacey's and Venture Outdoors, and so it was really a great opportunity for us to reach across departments and across campus and pull together what I thought was a pretty successful wilderness celebration. And so that's it. Questions?
Listening.
Yeah. Are you limited in how far you can go on a field trip?
Only by time and
money.
So, like on Fridays, we usually, right, depends on how early we can rise the troops, you know, rouse the troops. Mm-hmm. We usually leave early days, we'll leave at 8 and get back at 6. But the Wilderness Ed people don't go, you know, several days. So, it's really just, yeah, time and money and
I just wondered if you had any chance to get up into the newly acquired, the Finch Prime lands up by OK Slip Falls and the Essex Chain. And
yeah, we haven't as a department. I know my colleague Bill Brown, I call my local Adirondack guide, has gone in and done some scouting, but we have yet to take students in just because, you know, we haven't explored the area yet. Have you been?
No.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
We need the lights back on or not?
I just asked Diane to do it.
Oh, so. Aren't you clever? I thought you could do it by remote control.
No, can't do that yet.
All right. Well, I promised Marcus that the SGA report wouldn't always be the very last thing on the agenda, so let's change it up and you can go first.
Just a few things in my report that I commented on that have happened between our meetings, and the one I want to bring the most attention to is definitely Scott's work with Hits on Us. He and his committee have done a fantastic job, not just coordinating this past week's worth of events, but also, I noted in my report, I'm pleased to see how much work they put into drawing in all different facets of the campus to make it a campus-wide push. It's not just a student's issue. It's not just a public affairs issue or conduct and community standards. Everyone needs to take a part in addressing this issue and ending the problem at hand. So I'm very pleased with what they've done, and all credit goes to Scott and his team. They're doing a fantastic job. Also, just put briefly that I met with the faculty senate meeting in October and addressed the faculty that in this tight budget season, the students wanted to do their part, student government rather wanted to do their part so that student government and faculty together could provide the best opportunities for students. So I reiterated to the Faculty Senate that there is money available to them through student government for different programs that they wish to do, not limitless resources, but do what we can. And within that day, our treasurer, Katie, had received 2 to 3 different emails from faculty saying, I want to do this, how do I do it? And they've been, she has already worked through to get that underway. And also that building off of that on something on a larger scale, hopefully by next year, the student government used to have a policy where we would set up an ad hoc committee that would take, I'll use an example, $50,000 out of our reserves and send out a campus-wide message. We have $50,000 up for grabs. You give us a proposal on some core idea you'd like to do. You want to see one of the classrooms get redone up. I know we gave the art department a kill a couple years ago. Some major project in that regard, and field proposals and give out monies that way to help different departments who are struggling to get money to do those kind of grant projects. And we're hoping to bring that back for next year so that while we're still in this tight time, students can do what they can.
Any questions? Probably be getting more emails soon. Once everybody hears the budget presentation. Thank you, Marcus. Provost Madden?
You have my report, and I won't repeat it. I wanted to highlight one thing, though, only Dean Brower has left. Oh. I was hoping to thank him because the NCATE, the National Council for Accreditation of Teacher Education visit, was very positive. We don't get the final word, so we can't publicly say that we've been reaccredited until April, but in the exit interview it was clear that the committee's recommending that we passed all the standards. They're making a few recommendations for areas for improvement, but there were no surprises there. There were things that we had already said in our self-study report that we wanted to work on. And this is a huge effort. It takes 2 years. Every faculty member is involved. Every department has to do a self-assessment and get accredited by its professional organization, and then it all goes to the NCATE, and then they do their review. So it's a massive amount of work for a whole lot of people. It's really worth noting. And so if Peter were here, I would thank him again personally, but at least the minutes can show that. Any questions about anything else?
The programs that are in the hopper,
mm-hmm,
with SUNY,
mm-hmm,
what's the
delay?
They've gone to the big black hole?
They're either
there
and not communicating much about them at this point.
Okay. If there's anything we can do to help, let us know.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Maggie. Jan, you want to go next?
Sure.
See if everybody's awake.
All right, so again, folks should have received my reports. Just wanted to mention again that recently the Senate passed a minor for a minor in music composition, which is a Crane internal minor, and the President's Council has approved that. The President signed off on that, and luckily that one is a minor, so it doesn't have to go to SUNY, so we can start implementing that one now. So that would be nice. Then the Graduate Affairs Committee did approve the change in the date for the withdrawal in the SU for the graduate students, so that's now going to go into the December Senate meeting for final approval of Senate before heading to the President's Council. There was a small, we discovered with the help of our registrar, Ramona Ralston, that there was a small discrepancy in the wording of the undergraduate and the graduate policy, and we like to keep those types of things as close as possible when it comes to issues like dates when things are supposed to happen. And so rather than taking that back to the full Senate, the two committee chairs are coming together, figuring out what's happening with that. They'll bring it to the exec board, and since the Senate basically passed the need of extending this date, I don't think they'll quibble between 2 days plus or minus from where they were thinking it was going to be. It's still going to be an extension. And then the hope is then that with that extension, there'll be more time between when the students are deciding about withdrawing and changing their grading system to pass-fail, which is the SU system, or having a numeric grade, they'll be having more time between then and the early alert period, so that there'll be more time for advisors to contact the students, talk with them about their options, and decide how they should be able to move forward. And that was the main reason for moving those dates. Other than that, word on the street from the faculty and staff is that they are very appreciative of President Esterberg and all she's been doing thus far, and also very appreciative of the details that we've been receiving about budget. I've gotten a number of comments after our open session faculty senate meeting yesterday, and a few more emails this morning now that email is functional. And so that's the only other updates besides the report. Any questions?
Any questions? I would just like to express my appreciation for your leadership. It's a pleasure to be working in collaboration with you and with the entire Faculty Senate. So I'm really looking forward to continuing our conversations about budget and programming, and thank you.
Okay. Rick?
I wanted to underscore two areas that are in my written report highlights. One is in the Computing and Technology Services area, otherwise known as CTS. We are embarking on a significant network upgrade process as we speak. We have a 13-year-old network infrastructure on this campus. So the equipment that drives our network, the wiring, the equipment is some of the key pieces of equipment. We have one piece of equipment that's a $200,000 piece. It's 13 years old. So we are working on this network upgrade. It's going to take us all year to do it, but the key pieces underway right now. $1.1 million process with about $350,000 to $500,000 underwritten by the SUNY Construction Fund as part of the infrastructures. We can't afford to do the whole thing on our own, so the SUNY Construction Fund, with Gerhardt's help, Tony DiTullio has helped us to augment that part of it. That upgrade also includes, if you look around campus, like that's a fire detector, but we have these little radios that send signals, wireless signals, around. They look sort of like this. There's 400 of those on this campus that do the wireless access points. So we're doing a engineering study on all the wireless access points. We have, if you will, dead spots on campus that we need to address, that needs to get taken care of. So this process includes the upgrade of those wireless access points. In the athletic area is another area, and then I'm not going to go into some of the other ones. There's lots of details in institutional research, all the studies they have, and financial aid. But in the athletic area, I'm really pleased with our men's soccer program. This is a major accomplishment for them. They hosted their first ever playoff here. We had two of our players were selected All SUNYAC. Actually, three players were All SUNYAC awards, and they had a great season. The women's program had two players selected to All SUNYAC, and they had a much better season. And then in the hockey program, the women's program's off to a great start. The men beat two ranked teams this fall, just in the past couple of weeks, Hobart and Geneseo. So they're off to a great start as well. And some of the other teams we hope will, through their recruiting efforts and the work that they're doing, this would be in basketball, volleyball, the softball program, the women's side, women's softball. We hope through their recruiting efforts and through their coaching tactics will certainly bring the stature of the program up to the point where the college wants to just be more competitive. So that's really the track we're on. I think I mentioned that at the last meeting. So I'm really quite pleased at the progress that some of these teams are making. So, thank you.
Thank you. Any questions about that? Okay, student affairs.
Well, you've got the written report. I'll just reference that all the great work that Scott and SGA and other student groups are engaged in relative to the It's On Us really fit into a larger kind of civility initiative that we've started several years ago. We call it BEAR, Be Ethical, Aware, and Responsible in Potsdam. It involves Greek life, athletics, SGA, a number of other student and student groups. And so it's just very reflective of the values and expectations that we have of our community. So I thought I'd mention that. Questions? Roger, I can tell you that I don't know the statistic right now relative to mid-year transfers, but we generally historically have housed around 55 to 60% of transfers who come to Potsdam. Okay. Okay?
Thank you. Last but not least.
Just real quickly, you have my report, our report in your folder. Just an opportunity to kind of highlight beyond the numbers. My campaign report is usually about numbers. Had some very nice gifts come in, and you can see in the report one of the most recent trips, and the president was along for this trip, was an honorary degree ceremony in Washington, D.C. last week to our trustee Hayden Land from Lockheed Martin, who is partnering with us on support of our STEAM initiative, which is a new approach to creative learning with arts in the STEM program. And Maggie's been working very hard on this as well. And what this DC opportunity created for us was awareness. We had congressional members there, staffers, and more importantly, conversation before and after the actual event about the importance of this STEAM proposal and the fact that it is providing a new way to look at learning for those in the STEM fields. And the genesis of it really came from Lockheed Martin and our trustee Hayden Land, who said, you know, we're really looking at our scientists in the STEM fields, and we need them to be more creative in their approach to problem solving and learning in general. So that's where the arts kind of is being discussed in that framework. I don't know if you have anything more to say about that.
I think all I will say is we were working very closely with SUNY and their consultants to really get meetings with some of our congressional delegation, and I think this is an example of, I think, a very good partnership with the SUNY system. We had one of their staffers really for an entire day, I think, doing a lot of heavy lifting, getting us into offices. So it was, I think, a very fruitful trip.
Considering it was a week after election.
Exactly.
That was a bit of a challenge, but it's very exciting, and the possibilities are out there. So there's a lot of people on campus that are doing the work, and we're trying to create the awareness and all of that. So very exciting, and I just wanted to thank Alex again for her work on Merit. It's one of the new social media tools that we use. She made a presentation to this group before, but the success of it is really wonderful. Another area that Alex is managing for the college, so I just want to recognize the success of that program and the work that Alex is putting into it. And we're also working on a mobile-friendly site in the coming year. We're working with CTS on that. Obviously, there's other priorities right now, but we hope to get an active mobile site so that people will have it on their phone and students. Lots of exciting things happening, and I think most of you know my contact information. If you have any questions about anything, or concerns, or offers of help, I know Junior very connected politically, so some possible connections, so it doesn't hurt to have all of you on our team when we go to Albany or Washington.
Can you contribute on your via your cell phone now, your smartphone?
Yes, you can. You can go into, but you have to do it through the web.
Okay.
We're not there quite yet. But by the
so that's
time,
why the mobile site is.
Yes.
Another
time,
reason why the mobile site is important.
Yes. You can, but it's not user friendly at this point. So by June 30th, we hope to have a very user friendly.
So I can't just like text SUNY Potsdam and give you money.
You can text me.
Well, yeah. No, I just thought, you know, they have like those disaster appeals, you know,
yes.
If you text to Red Cross now,
yes.
And you automatically donate $10 or
yes.
Something.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We explored a lot of those kind of events,
mm-hmm.
And sometimes they're more work than their return, and so we have to be more cognizant of the staff.
Are you on Twitter?
We are.
I'm not.
We can get you there.
Are you?
I am.
I'm on Facebook, but I'm not on Twitter. Actually, they just Bill Clinton and George W. Bush just had a little Twitter thing exchange because George W.'s book on 42 or whichever number the old guy is.
Yeah.
Bill Clinton sent him a Twitter message saying how much he enjoyed the book and something about that. And I can't believe you're not on Twitter. You're still not on Twitter. So George Bush sends back on Instagram message. Thank you. I'm glad you liked it. I can't believe you're not on Instagram.
Good.
So there. Thanks, Vicki. Anybody have any other questions? Okay. We have exhausted the agenda, and hopefully not all the participants. Our next meeting is on Friday, the 13th of February, signifying nothing. Except it's the day before Valentine's Day, so don't forget to buy something for your significant other. And April 10th after that, and then April 24th will be the inauguration. And then we will have been through almost another year,
almost
coming up to graduation.
Mm-hmm.
And then pretty soon we'll be in the bicentennial year. Very exciting stuff. Okay, does anybody have anything else? Not, thank you all for coming and presenting and participating, and happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you.
Thanksgiving to you too.
And if you're Canadian, what is it, this weekend?
No, it's Columbus Day.
You already had it. Columbus Day, that's right. If you're Canadian, happy belated Thanksgiving. Too bad, right? A? Am I right?
I'm going to take it. I'm going to take it.